Universal Pictures presents everything you always wanted to do in high school with everyone you always wanted to do it with.
Hey, bud. Let's party.
They're the students of Ridgemont High. Brad Hamilton, the fast food king.
I shall serve no fries before their time.
It says 100% guaranteed, you moron.
Mister, if you don't shut up, I'm going to kick 100% of your ass.
Charles Jefferson, a man with a mission.
Oh, gnarly.
Linda Barrett, not exactly the girl next door.
Awesome. Totally awesome.
And Jeff surfs up Spicoli.
People on lewds should not drive. My skull. I'm so wasted.
See Fast Times at Ridgemont High.
The third flick is Fast Times at Ridgemont High from 1982.
Soundtrack.
I was 11 at this point. So you were born in 82. I was 11 at this
September
point.
September of 82, yeah.
I remember the trailer coming out of this, and I'm like, this movie looks raunchy. And it was.
It is. Yeah.
And this movie has grown over the years is a classic. It did pretty well. But over time, it's held up really, really well, and it's a good pinpoint of that particular period in the early 1980s and what high school life was really like. So this was directed by Amy Heckerling. We were just talking about her a little bit off the mic here. It's a comedy. It's from It's an hour and 30 minutes. It's rated R. It was actually rated X at first, and they had to clip down a few scenes, the ones specifically
the ones
with Jennifer
with
Jason Leigh.
And Phoebe Cates, those two.
Yes. And basically, anytime this song in the background by Jackson Browne came on,
this was
Jennifer Jason Leigh was banging somebody.
He was in town. Jackson Browne was in town, I think it was almost two summers ago now. He opened for James Taylor at Fenway.
Yeah.
And I was there, and it was when he sang this song, everybody my age and older was like singing along.
It's a great tune.
And everybody remembers it partially because of this movie.
Between this and Running on Empty,
exactly.
I think this is probably my more favorite of Jackson Browne's two big hit songs. But it was funny. At one point, too, in the movie, I just rewatched this the other night, too, since you picked this one, and they stopped the film, they stopped the soundtrack right at the point of climax for one of Jennifer Jason Leigh's boyfriends.
Oh, gosh.
Because he's all done, and then it's like the music just stops, and it's pretty funny. And it's just like, oh, that was clever.
That's great.
So it starred Sean Penn, probably his best movie, I think. I know he did Milk, I know he did Mystic River, but this movie is Sean Penn to me. I think this movie, he is great in this.
I think you're right, yeah.
It's just, this is an iconic guy. You know, the stone surfer in high school just wants to have his tasty waves, hang out with his buds, and get high. Judge Reinhold, fantastic in it. Jennifer Jason Leigh, Phoebe Cates. Ray Walston is Mr. Hand, one of the best teachers of all time in film.
I don't know.
Let's write it on the board.
I don't know. All of my classes.
I like that. And I'm going to attribute that quote to you. He's just fantastic in it.
Yeah.
And, the scene where he comes in with his schedule and it's like game on. It's like he's going to be after this guy all year.
I don't know if Derek was around when I first watched it, but the scene in Mr. Hand's class when he passes out the schedule and they all smell it. And I remember saying to Derek, what the heck are they doing? And it's like,
by
the time I knew what a mimeograph machine was, but by the time I was getting up in school, it was all Xerox.
Sure.
You know, and Derek's like, they were sniffing the ink to get high.
Yeah.
He's like, we all did it.
Yeah.
It's like, that was very accurate.
It's like, there was a fresh copy.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of little quirky things in it. And the scenes in the mall are fantastic. It shows you a lot of, it like opens up in the mall. It opens up with that Go-Go song we were playing. And it's just very, very clever. It's all these people that you really knew in high school.
Yeah.
And even nowadays, you know, Cameron Crowe, who did all kinds of great movies, and he's a writer for Rolling Stone. He was still relatively young. He decides to go back to high school, and he wrote a book about being undercover in high school after he had already graduated. He went back and befriended a bunch of people, including this kid named Rat, who they end up using. They end up using in the film. So the kid Rat that's in the film is based on one of the people that he knew, Andy Rathbone, which was the name of the student. Is whom the character Rat was modeled. The film is adapted by a book from Cameron Crowe after he spent the year at Claremont High School in San Diego, California. He underwent research for his 1981 book, Fast Times at Ridgemont High, A True Story, his observations about high school and the students he befriended. And it had a budget of $4.5 million, and it earned $27.1 million.
Nice.
This was a lot of people's first movie, including Nicolas Cage, who is known as Nick Coppola.
It's the only time he ever used his real last name, Coppola.
Coppola, Nick Coppola. Coppola. And and he had the Boo Radley moment where he doesn't speak at all. You just see him make a couple of faces, and he's one of Brad's buddies.
It's actually appropriate considering the next movie we're going to talk about, Edward Scissorhands.
Mm-hmm.
Nicolas Cage is the one who first got Johnny Depp to act.
No kidding.
Mm-hmm. One who encouraged him to do that.
That's a cool little tidbit there.
Yeah.
Studio was Universal Pictures. The plot is a group of Southern California high school students are enjoying their most important subject, sex, drugs, and rock and roll. Again, tons of people in this movie, and it was their first movie. You also have a guy that plays Jefferson. You have
Forrest Whitaker.
Yeah, yep. Forrest Whitaker shows up, and he's super intimidating in it. He's got one line, which is basically back off.
The best.
Yeah. but not back off.
One of the best scenes, I can't say some of it on the air, but is when Spicoli, so Sean Penn, and Forrest Whitaker, his character, Jefferson's little brother, they stole the car that the alumni had given Jefferson for playing football, and they crash it. And the little brother's like, he's going to kill us. He's going to kill us. He says some other words, too.
Yes. Well, what is he going to do? Make up your mind.
He's going to blank, do what? And he's going to kill us. He's going to blank, and then he's going to kill us.
And then he's
going
to kill us.
I love that.
Oh, yeah, it's great. And then he's just flying through, like, with the using his car, and he's, like, going in between cars, and it makes himself a third lane. Really, really good. 7.2 out of 10. Like I remember the commercial for this too. I mean, I was old enough; I was 11, and I remember just the sneakers and Fast Times at Ridgemont High. And I'm like, I want to see that because, of course, I was a kid. Yeah. I was in like third, fourth grade, so I'm like, oh, that movie looks cool. And of course, I looked up to my big brother, who was 4 years older than me.
Yeah,
he was only in like seventh grade at the time, but I'm like, he's on his way to high school. It's like, this looks like a cool movie. I would say I would go against like the movies to see before you're 14, like To Kill a Mockingbird. I'd say if you're 16, see this movie.
Yeah,
I'd say if you're 15 to 16, see this movie.
No joke before.
Yeah, it's got some hard
eighth grade.
It's got some hard topics in it. The thing is, Roger Ebert hated this movie. He said he said he loved Jennifer Jason Leigh, and he hated the fact that they made her kind of trampy the whole time. But it's like, that's what the character was. It's like, and there were people like that. It's like she was curious about sex, so she went out and did it as much as she could, you know. And he basically said it was just a raunch fest, but he liked, you know, how a bunch of the students came in, and it was well acted. One of the guys in the film that I think was great was Mike. Who's the ticket salesman?
Damone. What the heck is it? Robert Romanus, think, right?
Yeah, that sounds right. And
was cute. The first time I saw it, I was like,
He really didn't act much after this. It was pretty much I guess he turned to televisions afterwards. It was really one of his only acting jobs. And I remember seeing that early on and thinking, oh, this guy's so cool. And then seeing how scummy he is. I mean, he's just scummy. And you know, but you feel bad for, you know, the guy that's the super innocent, you know, between Jennifer Jason Leigh and the guy that plays Rat there. I mean, they're the super innocent, and they make their bad moves, too. You know, it's like it's all about Amy Heckerling was talking about the movie, and she goes, it's all about these kids that are like almost in adult bodies that have to grow up and deal with this stuff. So that's why it's Fast Times. It's just like you're learning about like having adult relationships, getting screwed over, you know, having, you know, just all kinds of things. Like Phoebe Cates in the background, the cars, iconic movie scene where she comes out of the pool. Judge Reinhold is basically having a fantasy about her. And it's like, I read VHS copies of this tape. The part where Phoebe Cates come out of the water, the tracking was always off because some teenage boys would rent this movie and just keep rewinding it over and over again and playing it over and over again.
I was reading some Florida paper, which is where they filmed the movie in Florida, I think.
Yep.
They say that her nude scene was voted the top nude scene of all time by Mr. Skin.
Mr. Skin, huh? That's high praise.
I know, right?
That's high praise
but also,
from Mr. Skin.
Judge Reinhold, Brad, when he was having his fantasy scene, he brought some props to make it more realistic or, you know, just...
To get a reaction out of it.
Right. Yeah. So Phoebe Cates comes walking in, and her look of horror and disgust is real.
Because
she had no idea, you know, she had no idea. She was not acting in that part.
Yeah. Like I said, I rewatched this the other night. Yeah. Really funny. I mean, there's some very,
definitely,
very awkward moments in it, but, you know, I'd say, you know, you get to a point where you're 15, 16 years old, you know, you're going to appreciate this movie. I mean, it's a coming of age
story. It's
still
relevant, even though...
Yeah.
It's, you know, 30-plus years later. It's definitely still relevant.
And there's a couple of moments in it, you know, that people criticize. It's like, well, this is kind of taken away from what the movie is. And it's like there's a couple of hard moments in there. But it's like, no, to me, it's all about this awkwardness. And it's all about this reality. It's like you never really know where things are going sometimes. It's like you could be making your plans. Even in high school, you're just kind of like wandering through life. It's like you have Judge Reinhold who's really... He's really the
adult in the movie of the kids, but he's still a kid. But he always has to work because he wants to pay for his great car. Mm-hmm. You know, he's got six more payments on his car, so he gets fired and jumps from job to job, right?
And then
he loses three jobs in the movie.
I think he ends up, his second job, he works for like a fish and chips, and he's driving to
Mr.
a delivery.
Captain Hooks.
He's dressed like a pirate.
Uh-huh.
And this hot woman is next to him checking him out. He's checking her out.
Yes, you know who
and
the hot woman is?
And he realizes, like, shoot, I have this uniform on. Who is it?
It is Nancy Wilson of Heart.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, it's Nancy Wilson.
I did not know
She's got this big furry shirt on, and she's just like, oh, my God. He realizes he's wearing the pirate shirt after she's like, puts her hand to her face like, oh, my God, I'm so embarrassed for you. And he just throws out all of his chips and fish out the window, and that's it.
And he ends up stopping a robbery at his other job.
Yeah, that's the best. See, one of the best endings of a movie of all time, because you get to see Judge Reinhold as Brad just beaten down the whole movie, and he's trying to do the right thing.
Yep.
And at the very end, he has this comeuppance moment, and Spicoli's there with him, and it's just like, greatest way to end the movie right there.
Absolutely.
It's like a little bit of hope, move on to, you know, adulthood. This is great. Really funny movie. It's adapted from the book that Cameron Crowe wrote again. Universal gave the film a limited theatrical release, thought it was going to fail. And August 13th, 1982, it opened in about 500 theaters.
When did it open? August 13th?
1982.
Five weeks before I was born. Exactly 5 weeks.
So it earned $2.5 million in its opening weekend, and then it was later widened to 713 theaters and earned $3.25. It ranked 29th among the U.S. releases of 1982 and earned more than $27 million, six times its $4.5 million budget. Later gained popularity through television and home video releases. I think this was on HBO all the time. And in the early 80s, that's all there really was. You had HBO. There wasn't really much else on there. I think the Movie Channel and Cinemax and stuff came a little later, but that was pretty much it. We mentioned Nicolas Cage was his first movie. He actually went to be Spicoli, but they did.
Oh, really?
Or actually, no, they were going to hire him as Brad. That's what it was.
Oh, he was too young, right? Or something?
He was 17. Like, he was the one person that was underage. Jennifer Jason Leigh was even like 20, 21 in it. But they said teenagers could only work till like 5 or 6 o'clock, something like that. So they only had him for a short time. The mall scenes were all done on the overnights.
Mm-hmm.
There was one scene where they had two teenage kids buying tickets for Mike for like Van Halen early on in the movie.
I remember that, yeah.
And the kids were only like 15, so they had to do it within like 10 minutes between when the mall was open and before it was closed, they said, before they had to get them off the set, otherwise they would have been fined. There was a TV spinoff called Fast Times that I actually remember. It came on in 1986, which was 4 years after the movie. I'm like, why? And I'm what, 14 at this point? I'm like, why are they making a TV movie out of a movie that's so old, you know, because it was 4 years. At that point, every year in your life was like so long. But they had Mr. Hand in it and Vincent Schiavelli, who played the biology teacher.
Vargas,
yes, who played Vargas.
Yeah.
And other characters from the movie showed up, but they were played by different actors. As a matter of fact, I want to say Spicoli was in it, but I want to say it was his brother. I want to say it was Chris Penn, but I'm not absolutely sure on that.
They look alike, the two of them. Well, Chris Penn since passed away, but they do look alike.
Yeah, yeah. He, that was redone, and that happened for, I think, a season. Again, over the years, it obtained iconic status. In an interview, Sean Penn said, none of us had any idea it would take on a life of its own. Justine Bateman was offered the role of Linda, who was Phoebe Cates, but declined. Instead, she preferred to star in Family Ties, which ran for 7 years, of course, with Michael J. Fox and Michael Gross, and did pretty well for herself. Springsteen's sister's in the movie, too.
Oh, really?
She plays a cheerleader, yeah.
Oh, cool.
So Bruce Springsteen's sister shows up as a cheerleader in the movie. There's the point where they're all sitting there before, Kill Lincoln. They basically have the signs that say Kill Lincoln. It was the rival high school.
The two cheerleaders are trying to get them
into it. Trying to get everybody
Yeah, they have like a... She keeps shrieking all right and
yes,
everything.
Yes.
Is that sister?
That's Springsteen's sister, yeah.
That's
yeah.
too funny.
So they're trying to have a little Pop Warner rah-rah, and Springsteen's sister shows up and tries to get people going. And meanwhile, Eric Stoltz is throwing like paper planes through the gym
He's
and stuff.
He's in it. Anthony Edwards, I think, is in it too.
Yeah.
Was one of Spicoli's buddies.
So what they said about like the buddies in the movie. So Anthony Edwards and Eric Stoltz both went for Spicoli.
Oh, okay.
And Nicolas Cage and the guy that plays the one that looks kind of like Paul Williams there. I forget what his name is. But he was basically the buddies of Brad because they both went for Brad. What was his name? Let me say. Just says Brad's,
I can't remember
Brad's bud. It was either Stoner Bud or Brad's bud. Mark Ratner was Brian Backer. That was the one that was one of the leads there. Yeah, I'm not sure. I don't see it here. But anyway, there's another little blonde guy that went to be Brad, and they decided to put him as one of his buddies. So the casting director was really good to kids, and he basically got a whole bunch of people started on their careers.
I heard
after
that
this.
Judge Reinhold was like, wasn't he dating the casting director or something?
Yeah,
so
yeah,
like,
he lived upstairs
I wonder how
from
he got
Amy
that
Heckerling.
Job.
Yeah,
just joking, of course.
And he was an actor at the time. It said, yeah. And they said they were looking for people and didn't know, and they had to hide it from the producer. But then when the producer met him and liked him, they said, "Oh yeah, by the way, he's going out with the casting director." So, but yeah, excellent, excellent movie and a great, great soundtrack. So the soundtrack is all early rock and roll from the 70s and 80s.
Awesome.
A lot of
soundtrack.
Members of the Eagles. It peaked at number 4 on the Billboard album chart. Features work of many quintessential 80s rock artists, including like Tom Petty here and the Go-Go's. And you got Billy Squire and
Jackson Brown. Yeah.
And yeah, it's really, really good. It's a great soundtrack. So Fast Times at Ridgemont High, and goes in as one of the best high school movies of all time, I think.
I think so. And they also said that this was really considered one of the first high school comedies.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It started because this came right before all the Rat Pack, or mm-hmm. Brat Pack stuff.
Yep.
The John Hughes stuff.
That is true. It's, as a matter of fact, you get to see a few things in here that's like, geez, I think John Hughes lifted this from Fast
clearly.
Times at Ridgemont
yeah.
High. But I also love the fact that, you know, there's this period of, 82, you know, mm-hmm. and I was around there. I was much younger than them, but I remember going to the mall was a big deal, you know. The food court
yep.
was a big deal.
Absolutely.
The video games were a big deal. The mm-hmm. arcade, you know, the movie theater. It was all a big deal because everybody conglomerated that one spot.
Yep.
And, I mean, you still have malls now, but you also have mini malls. You got a lot more choices and
right.
stuff now. But back then, you basically saw everybody you went to school with on the weekends, too. You really much ran into everybody.
Pretty much, yeah.
And this part's great, too, when Mike tells him to put on, was it side 2 of Zeppelin 4 before he makes out? So, Kashmir, Zeppelin in the background, too. Fast Times, Ridgemont High. Anything else you want to say about it? Otherwise, we'll move on to number 4.
Nope, it just, every time I see it, it makes me laugh. It's hysterical. It's one of those movies that if you're having a bad day mm-hmm. or you just want to laugh at something ridiculous, watch this.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely.
Watch this. Here with you until 7 p.m. I'm here with Molly Gary. My name is Chris Earle. Back in a moment with flick number 4.
Talking song from talking. sun.
This is flick number four. It is Edward Scissorhands from 1990. Is it Scissors or Scissorhands?
I think it's Scissorhands.
It is Scissorhands.
This is my...
Pass me the good scissors.
This is obviously one of many collaborations Danny Elfman and Tim Burton did together. And
yes.
Out of all of them that I can think of, this is probably my favorite.
This is your favorite?
In terms of the music, it's... Oh, yeah. This yeah. and probably...
When's Pee-wee?
I was going to say, this Pee-wee and Batman.
Batman's pretty good, all
of their early stuff, actually. Mm-hmm. But yeah, this is so haunting, which is perfect.
This is from 1990. It's rated PG-13, hour and 45 minutes long. Very quirky movie. Interesting movie. It's drama, fantasy, romance. Was released in December 14th of 1990 in the U.S. Director's Tim Burton. Again, Danny Elfman did the soundtrack. Stars Johnny Depp, Winona Ryder, Diane Wiest, Anthony Michael Hall, who pumped himself up for this movie.
Just a bit.
Studios 20th Century Fox. Plot is a gentleman with scissors for hands is brought into a new community after living in isolation for years and years. So again, the soundtrack is the fourth feature film collaboration between director Tim Burton and Danny Elfman. He had an orchestra that had 79 musicians in it.
Wow.
And Elfman and Burton have both said this is their most personal and favorite work that they've done is Edward Scissorhands. And in addition to Elfman's music, there are three Tom Jones songs that appear.
That's right.
It's Not Unusual, Delilah, and With These Hands. Which is also, It's Not Unusual, is used in Mars Attacks, which is another great,
Tim Burton movie.
I love Mars Attacks.
I do,
so much.
I do
that
too.
One,
I
that one's a lot of fun.
I haven't seen it in years. I need to.
And there's a lot of people in that one too. It's a nice
Jack
ensemble
Nicholson.
Cast in that. So again, Edward Scissorhands, 1990, had a budget of $20 million. It made $86 million. It was a big hit. It's got a 7.9 out of 10 on IMDb. So tell me about this one, Molly. What is your history with Edward Scissorhands?
I was 8 when this movie came out. So mm-hmm. I remember it coming out just before Christmas of 1990. I went to see it with my mom and then a friend of mine and her mom.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, fell in love with it. I mean, for a few nights... After that, I had nightmares. Not like really, like, oh, you know, really scary nightmares, but still.
Uh-huh.
Especially, and for years after, whenever I would watch the movie, because I used to, before I owned the movie, I used to get it from the library and, you know, the video store.
Sure.
The part when we first see Edward, well, actually, it's not when we first see Edward, but when Peg Boggs first meets Edward.
Which is Diane Wiest, yep.
Diane Wiest, when he comes out of the shadows and they hear the dun, dun. You know, like that music, and you see, and it's like for years that freaked, and but then it's over that quickly, you know, like the scary, it's you realize that it's not. But I had nightmares from that part for nights after. But a few months after I saw this, I was at the same friend's house, and her sisters were watching the movie Crybaby, which came out a few months before.
Yep, John Waters' movie. Yep.
Which was also Johnny Depp. And they were telling me, that's the same guy who played, you know, Crybaby and Edward Scissorhands. That's the same actor. I said, no, it's not. And they said, yeah, it really is. And that's when my almost 28-year crush on Johnny Depp began. was after all of that. This is my favorite of all. I like Johnny Depp. I mean, his recent stuff hasn't been that great, but this is my favorite of his by far. And he only says like 169 words in the entire movie.
Yeah, he's pretty quiet in this one.
Yeah.
He was kind of on fire doing 21 Jump Street, which was on the Fox network when Fox first started in like the late 80s. And he wanted to move over into movies, and he wasn't necessarily the first choice on this. It was kind of interesting in the background.
Who's
they had
Tom Hanks,
actually. Gary Oldman both turned down the part. Jim Carrey was considered for the role. And the person who wrote the script with Burton, Caroline Thompson, wanted John Cusack. which would have made an interesting movie. Elsewhere, William Hurt, Robert Downey Jr., and Michael Jackson expressed
interest. I heard Tom Cruise
interest.
Was interested, too.
And Tom Cruise as well. And I guess he had a meeting with him, but he didn't like the ending. And Tim Burton said, I'm not changing the ending for you. And that ended that.
I think I read somewhere that Tim Burton hadn't really watched 21 Jump Street.
Like, right.
Didn't really know Johnny Depp's work before this, but Tim Burton was really the one that pushed for Johnny Depp, because Johnny Depp really, he was doing 21 Jump Street and known on TV, but really carrying a movie. He hadn't done a lot of that, and the studio didn't really want it, but Tim Burton fought for him.
I think it worked out good because you have him doing how many movies together afterwards?
They've done
eight or nine
movies together, and now Johnny Depp is like the godfather to his kids. It's like, they're like best friends now.
And also, up until recently, this is when Winona Ryder was at her peak. Because she was in Edward Scissorhands, she was in Beetlejuice earlier with Tim Burton, of course, and she was also in Mermaids at the time.
I loved that movie.
And a number of other ones, Heathers, which is a great movie. But yeah, so this was Winona Ryder's period until Stranger Things brought her back into the limelight after her short run into kleptomania in the 90s and 2000s. Yeah,
I heard that she. A lot of people thought Johnny Depp is the one that, because she was supposed to be in Godfather Part 3.
Right.
And she dropped out of it, saying she was sick. Who knew if that was true? It's a good thing she dropped out of it, because Godfather 3 was horrible.
Yeah, it was pretty bad. And then they had, what's her name in it?
Talia Shire, the daughter.
The daughter, it was another Coppola, right?
She was so bad.
Yeah, she was horrible.
The director. That's going to drive me nuts. She directed Lost in Translation and Sophia Coppola.
Yeah, Sophia Coppola.
But she had the part of Kim before Johnny Depp did.
Yeah.
And I think it's because of the relationship that she had with Tim Burton, you know, that obviously got her. She wore a wig. She's a blonde in this movie.
Right. Which is a little offsetting to me.
Yeah.
It was to me. I'm like, why is she blonde?
Yeah. When I first saw it, I didn't know. You know, but now I look back and it is a little weird.
To me, it's always brown hair. Nobody has true black hair. But a brunette wearing a blonde wig and not dyeing their eyebrows. can't officially be blonde. You can't have blonde hair and, you know, black eyebrows, you know? Just weird. But Tim Burton's a little weird. And this one's definitely so quirky and so strange, but great, great flick. The role of the inventor was written specifically for Vincent Price, would ultimately be his final feature film. Burton actually wrote something called Vincent in 1982.
That's right. I've seen it.
It's a tribute to Vincent Price and his movies.
Mm-hmm.
And Vincent Price and him became good friends over the years. And it's like, it's kind of nice, you know? It's like Vincent Price has a movie based on his career.
And his part was supposed to be...
How can you not like him?
His part was supposed to be a little bigger, the role of the inventor.
Yeah.
But he was really sick. I guess he had emphysema and Parkinson's, which...
Big
when
smoker,
you, when
yeah.
you see him, when you first see him in the movie, when he comes to watch the cookies being made, and, you know, you see he has a cane. You can't really tell the effects. You can't really see the effects of his illness in later scenes, but that one you can kind of tell the Parkinson's, for sure.
You know who else is great in it? The one that likes him, like flirts with him.
Kathy Baker.
Yeah, she's great in it. And one of my favorite scenes of the movie is when he is meeting all the ladies in town, and they're all feeding him ambrosia, and he's doing their hair for them, and they all have these crazy hairdos, you know.
I remember, a while ago now, because the first woman's hair that he cuts is, I can't remember.
Diane Weiss, right?
No, she's the last. The woman who was a crush on him,
Yeah.
I can't remember what her, Joyce, I think is her name.
That's correct, yes.
And she literally... in the chair, and all the women do, which is really fun. Well, I don't know about Peg, but they all, I don't know what's appropriate to say on the air. they all have a good time.
Yes.
They enjoy themselves. That's a good way to, They enjoy themselves. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And another thing too, how he cuts all the dogs' hair. Those haircuts on the dogs were real.
This was pretty
which
cool.
Which is kind of creepy.
You love that when he just starts going nuts on the dog and you see all the fur like flying up in the air. Some of the topiary.
Goes from being a sheepdog into a poodle.
Yes. Some of the topiary that Edward makes in the movie can still be seen permanently at New York City Restaurant Tavern on the Green.
Mm-hmm.
So they actually still that have. Johnny Depp and Winona Ryder dated throughout the filming of this movie. They became engaged during the same year. The character Edward is based on a drawing that Tim Burton did in high school. The name Edward Scissorhands was taken directly from that drawing. I actually have that Tim Burton book about Oyster Boy.
I've heard about it.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. So he actually put out a book, and it has all these weird characters in it. It's pretty good. It kind of reminds you of those, that A to Z. What was the ones with all the kids getting wiped out?
Oh, you know, I know that, what you're talking. I can't think of the name.
A lot of college people had it in their dorms and stuff.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
It was similar to it. And it's like B is for Bobby who, you know, fell in the sink or something. And, you know, they had all kinds of crazy stuff. But it was very similar to that, you know. Tom Hanks, Gary Oldman, again, turned down the part, and some other people. Johnny Depp had to lose a reported 25 pounds for the role of Edward Scissorhands.
And he was already, like, a thin guy, so...
Yeah.
And they filmed this movie in Florida.
Yeah. And it was like latex, so there's no breathing room. I guess he threw up a bunch of times and passed out once or twice.
He wanted to go method, which I get.
Yeah.
And so he refused any sort of cooling mechanism. And so the neighborhood where they filmed a lot of the movie is based on the neighborhood where Tim Burton grew up in California.
Yeah.
It didn't have any trees, so there wasn't any shade. That scene towards the end where you see him running back to the house.
Yeah.
He threw up afterwards because he kept having to run and run. And I listened to a commentary on the movie that Tim Burton did with Danny Elfman, and he's like, the poor guy was just standing by the side, just like...
And latex, if you ever put on latex just to even do the dishes, you know, you got those up to your elbows and you put those on, there's no breathing room. It's like you take those off after 15 minutes
of
scrubbing and your hands are just like completely wet from sweat.
He had to have weird makeup on and, you know, the wig. And I remember I saw an interview we did years ago, like on YouTube or something, and they were asking him about Edward Scissorhands. And whoever, I can't remember who was interviewing him, but... they said, so you shaved your eyebrows, huh?
Uh-huh.
And he was like, no, I didn't. They put...
It was the makeup?
He told them, like, I'll shave the eyebrows. Nope, you know, he didn't mind doing it, but they put, you know, little prosthetics over so he didn't have to, shave the eyebrows.
Well, he did a good job. His hair was based on the guy from The Cure's hair, Robert Smith.
No kidding.
Yeah.
I had an Edward Scissorhands poster on the bulletin board in my room for years growing up.
Did you? I saw this in the theater. I saw this.
Oh, so I saw it twice.
I saw this with my girlfriend at the time. So this was my freshman year in college. And we went, you know, we were close to the break and went and saw Edward Scissorhands. I didn't really know what to think of it. Yeah, I liked it, but I was like, the ending with Anthony Michael Hall, I'm like, what? I'm like, what is going on here?
I know.
It's just, it's an odd movie to me. It's like I get why it's so popular, but it's very strange to me because it's very sweet, and then it has these moments of that are just like, what's going on here? It's like just terrifying.
Yeah.
And I guess you can relate it with To Kill a Mockingbird in a lot of ways.
Absolutely. And also
in some ways, Fast Times at Ridgemont High, where you have these really light moments and then all of a sudden something really serious happens.
It's like
whoa.
In Forrest Gump, as we talk about in a little bit, it's the same.
Yeah, very, very similar. Very similar with these films here that you picked today.
It's now that I've seen, you know, I was watching the movie again, I don't know, like a couple of weeks ago, because I hadn't seen it in a while. And, you know, now that I've seen countless Johnny Depp movies, you know, since then.
Yeah.
Because I'm obviously a big fan. You know, you look back, it's like, Derek disagreed with me, but I don't see Johnny Depp
In this movie.
In a lot of the
movies. In a lot of his movies, yeah.
No, but in this, like, I really don't see it. Like, there's some scenes...
No, he's completely disappeared in this role.
In some scenes, I recognize him. Like that scene after they all feed him.
Yeah.
And that guy with the wooden leg is talking to him, and he's, you know, Edward's looking back at him, kind of funny. You recognize him there.
To me, he's very creepy, because, I mean, here's this scarred, creepy guy. And I get the point where it's like, he kind of looks like a Cupid doll, and the girls, like, think he's cute and stuff.
With the mouth and everything,
but to me, I'm like, he's just creepy looking.
But it's... But only a few times did I recognize him. The one part where the face really, it didn't give me nightmares, mm-hmm. like the beginning part, but the one part where the face was like, made you shudder was at the end. The thing with Jim.
And just
that look in his eyes. It was like, geez.
Yeah, and Anthony Michael Hall goes out of his way to be a prick in this movie.
Well,
he really
does.
Actually,
a few years ago, when I worked at Quincy Market, I met him because I think he was in town filming something, and he was around, you know, and I saw somebody else go up to him and say, you know, I'm a fan, whatever. So, of course, I did because I said, oh, you know, I'm a big fan of your work. You know, I love, you know, your early stuff, Breakfast Club, 16 Candles. And I said, Edward Scissorhands. And he's like, oh, really?
Yeah.
Because I don't think a lot of people talk to him about, they're more about the Breakfast Club.
And oh, sure. And 16 Candles. Yeah.
And I said, yeah, but I don't like what you did to him at the end.
and then his face frowned.
And then he smiled at me and he's like, I get it. But he's like, I don't like what he did to me. I said, that's fair. Meaning he...
Yeah, no, that makes sense. It's pretty good. You want to say anything else about Edward Scissorhands, or you want to move on to Forrest Gump?
It's a great movie. It was my introduction to Johnny Depp. It still is my favorite of his movies, for sure.
I'm a Dead Man fan. I talked about
that
one a couple weeks ago. You got to see it. I'll let you borrow my copy.
I've heard it's great.
Oh, I love it. Yeah. Dead Man, I did a couple of weeks ago on here. Neil Young did the soundtrack. I talked about that. But I will loan you my copy of Dead Man.
Cool.
And you will be able to see that Johnny Depp movie. We are going to move on to number five of the five flicks for sake of time. It is Forrest Gump from 1994 here on Watch This.
Hello, my name's Forrest Gump. Would you like a chocolate?
Oh, thank you.
It's funny what a young man recollects.
You're the same as everybody else. You are no different.
Your boy's different.
Are you stupid or something?
Mama says stupid is as stupid does.
I'm Jenny.
I'm Forrest Gump.
She was my most special friend. My only friend.
We was together all the time. We was like peas and carrots, Jenny and I.
Run, Forrest!
Hey, stupid!
You wouldn't believe it if I told you, but I can run like the wind blows.
Who in the hell is that?
That there is Forrest Gump, Coach. Just a local idiot.
I never thought it would take me anywhere.
They even put me on a thing called the All-America Team. Where you get to meet the President of the United States.
Congratulations. How does it feel to be an All-American?
I gotta pay.
I believe he said he had to go pee.
Now, maybe it's just me, but college was very confusing times.
Have you ever been with a girl, Forrest?
I sit next to them in my home economics class all the time.
Have you given any thought to your future?
God, what's your sole purpose in this army?
To do whatever you tell me, drill sergeant?
You're a damn genius. You are going to be a general someday, go.
Yes, drill sergeant!
They sent in me. Vietnam.
Listen, you promise me something, okay? If you're ever in trouble, don't try to be brave. You just run, okay?
Okay.
Where are you boys from in the world?
Alabama, sir.
You twins?
No, we are not relations, sir. For some reason, what I was doing seemed to make sense to people.
Forget about me and get yourself out!
I've been awarded the Medal of Honor.
How come? Now, my mama's always telling me how miracles happen every day. Some people don't think so.
Jenny!
But they do. You can come home with me at my house in Greenbow. I'll take care of you.
Why are you so good to me?
You're my girl.
Paramount Pictures presents Tom Hanks.
I'm not a smart man, but I know what love is.
Robin Wright.
Will you marry me? I'd make a good husband, Jenny.
You would, Forrest.
But you won't marry me.
Gary Sinise.
I never thanked you for saving my life.
And Sally Field.
My boy Forrest is going to get the same opportunities as everyone else.
A film by Robert Zemeckis.
What's my destiny, Mom?
You're going to have to figure that out for yourself.
Never seem the same once you've seen it through the eyes of Forrest Gump.
My mom always said life was like a box of chocolates. You never know what you're gonna get.
Anyone 5 WMFO Medford.
I'm Ray Charles, and I just want to tell you that hearing is a wonderful gift. It's very precious. Please take care of it, huh?
All right, the fifth of the five flicks from Molly today is Forrest Gump. It came out in 1994, directed by Robert Zemeckis, who also did the Back to the Future trilogy.
Mm-hmm.
Stars Tom Hanks, Robin Wright, Gary Sinise, Sally Field. The presidencies of Kennedy and Johnson, Vietnam, Watergate, and other history unfold through the perspectives of an Alabama man with an IQ of 75. His name is Forrest Gump. It was distributed by Paramount Pictures. It has a 32-song soundtrack from the film released in 1994 with a ton of great, great, great rock and roll.
One of the best.
As well as Alan Silvestri's score. He does a suite on it that's about 7 or 8 minutes long, the Forrest Gump suite. It reached a peak of number 2 on the Billboard album chart, and the soundtrack went on to sell 12 million copies, one of the top-selling albums in the United States. Tell me about 1994, picking this one, Molly.
I went to see it with my dad in the summer, so it was the summer before I started middle school. He was a Vietnam vet, so it was an interesting movie to see. I have always been, you know, definitely still, I'm a big history buff.
Uh-huh.
And seeing, you know, I knew a lot of this history at the time, you know, like Watergate and Vietnam.
Sure.
And, you know, all this stuff. But to see it in a different way.
Yeah.
You know, and especially to somebody that was only 11, you know, going on 12. I was actually, because Forrest Gump is so childlike.
And he's so passive.
Right.
Nothing affects him.
Right. So yeah. it was the movie I could understand, you mm-hmm. know, a lot of the history because of the whole Forrest Gump, you know.
Sure.
His whole mentality and everything.
Definitely. Yeah. I saw this in the theater. 1994, great, great year for movies. You had Pulp mm-hmm. Fiction, you had yep. Shawshank Redemption, you had Forrest Gump. It was just awesome. It was great, great year for movies. To me, probably one of the best movie years after 1939. One of the best movie years. Top-rated movie. This is down as number 12. It won six Oscars, another 40 wins, and 67 nominations. There's a lot of people that are divided with this movie. I have a couple of people that hate this movie, Forrest Gump, and I think it's mostly based on their politics. They read into it a little too much. Mm-hmm. I love the part. I just rewatched this. Matter of fact, I watched it this morning before I came in here, just to refresh myself with Forrest Gump. There's just that great moment at the end where you have Forrest Gump thinking about what Lieutenant Dan thinks about life, which is it's predestined, and what his mother thinks about life, which is it's
life
a feather.
Life is like a box of chocolates.
It's a feather. And in the box of chocolates, you never know what you're going to get, and you're just going to float through life like the feather. And Forrest decides, no, it's a combination of both. So the feather can fall, and like you see at the beginning of the movie, it almost lands on another guy before we get to the bench and actually hear Forrest's story, and he puts it in his
book.
He puts it in his book, and then he passes it along. The feather falls out of the Curious George book a little later when he's reading it to his son. And it's just a great, great movie. It's such a spectacle to watch. And the thing is it's got a great, great script. And
it really does. It's easy to see why it won an Oscar for screenplay.
And Zemeckis says it in his commentary I was listening to. It's just like you have to have that combination of just something you don't see every day,
right,
and a great script where you really don't know what the hell is going to happen. And the fact that they base the story along these giant events happening in American history, and Forrest Gump is pretty much unaffected by it.
Yeah.
Because he leads with his heart the whole time.
I think the best example of, you know, the events, and, well, one of them was when he's staying in a hotel after he had gone to meet Nixon as a member. I think it was a member of the ping pong team.
Right.
And, you know, he was staying in a lousy hotel. So Nixon's like, oh, no, you know, I know a better place. You know, my people can take care of it for you. So he's staying in the hotel. So the next scene, you see Forrest Gump on the phone. He's like, yeah, you know, there's some people that look like they're locked out across the way because they're using flashlights and they're keeping me awake. And
right.
And then they say, oh, yeah, you know, we'll send somebody to take care of it. And then the camera pans down, and then on the desk set, the Watergate Hotel.
Right.
It's like, oh, so Forrest Gump reported the Watergate break-in.
Yeah, he indirectly was the reason why he reported the Watergate break-in. And then also the part where he's running with the bumper sticker.
Oh.
S happens.
Yeah.
And then, of course,
and then
have a nice day.
Face.
The smiley face. Just, there's so many things. The part, the only part of the movie where I'm just like, yeah, this is a little bit much. And it's maybe because I'm not a big runner. I'm like, when he runs all the way across America and back, I'm like, this is a little much now. But at the same time, you know, everything else is kind of cartoonish at times. It's just like you have to basically set yourself aside and just enjoy the ride of the movie. It's really fun.
The bench, you know, that he sits on for a large chunk of the movie. You know, they made five of them.
Yes.
For the movie. One of them's still in Savannah in a museum. I know many people that have seen it there.
Yep.
And two of them went to Paramount. And one of them is on the studio tour, which I went on a couple years ago, and I got to sit on it, and it was
neat. Nice.
And the tour guide told us a story of how, you know, years after the movie, Tom Hanks was on the lot filming something. I can't remember what.
Yeah.
And he decided to play a joke on the tour guests.
Yes.
He put on a Forrest Gump costume, or, you know, something similar, like a blue check shirt and khaki pants and sneakers.
Yep.
He sat on the bench with, like, you know, kind of like
awesome.
He sat with, like, a box of chocolate and a suitcase. Mm-hmm. And, you know, people didn't, you know, from far away, they thought it was like a statue or, you know, somebody that was, you know, like a, you know, just to make it look real, like that Forrest Gump was there. And when they came up to him, he'd be like, hello, my name is Forrest. Forrest Gump, you know, when he would talk to them. And it, like, and actually, that famous line, my name is Forrest Gump, people call me Forrest Gump, was ad-libbed.
I know, that's pretty wild.
And the director liked it so much, But I've sat on the bench on one of them.
And what's great is he based the accent off the little boy who was cast.
Which makes sense.
Yeah. And he's like, oh, why don't I just do his accent? I thought that was really cool. Bill Murray, John Travolta, Chevy Chase turned down the role of Forrest Gump. Travolta later admitted that passing on it was a mistake, but Travolta got his career kickstarted again with Pulp Fiction. But it would have been, you know, it would have been interesting. I mean, there's only, to me, it's Tom Hanks' role, you know, just like Atticus Finch was Gregory Peck, you know, this is Tom Hanks' role. Gary Sinise's lower legs were wrapped in special blue fabric to allow him to be digitally removed.
Mm-hmm.
Bubba Gump, of course, became a themed restaurant. It's got 33 locations around the world.
I've seen it.
Yep, I've been in. This was interesting. Kurt Russell said he did the voice of Elvis Presley.
I had heard that,
in the film, reprising his role from Elvis in 1979.
Yep.
And in the commentary, I was listening, and during that Elvis scene, it was the producers talking, Zemeckis, and nobody mentions Kurt Russell, which is interesting
to me. I think it's just one of those things that people wanted to keep on the DL.
It's definitely him, yeah, because I stopped and I listened to him.
That's Kurt Russell. Definitely.
Yep.
And I think it's neat, too, another side thing that Forrest Gump does.
Mm-hmm.
He teaches Elvis how to dance.
Yeah, he teaches them how to dance. And then they see him on TV.
Yep.
And he's like, do that thing you did again.
And then his mother says, this isn't for children's eyes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Jodie Foster, Nicole Kidman, and Demi Moore turned down the role of Jenny. I think Robin Wright, this is probably one of her best, too.
Definitely.
And she was, of course, great in House of Cards, too. But, Forrest Gump is Jenny. You know, you can't really picture anybody else. You can't picture anybody else as Bubba or Lieutenant Dan, either. It's just great. Gary Sinise is fantastic in it. I think he won that year, right?
He didn't. He got nominated, though.
Oh, okay. He got nominated.
It won
six Oscars that year, including Best Picture. Tom Hanks was not paid for the movie, but he took percentage points managed to get $40 million out of it.
Smart man.
There was no ball during the ping pong matches. It was all CGI, which is interesting. You watch that ping pong tune, he's playing against the wall. It's just crazy. There's so many moments in it that are just so comical and just like laugh out loud funny. You
and
see it for the first time.
All the pictures you see of Forrest Gump, his eyes are closed, which is great.
Now, I learned that little tidbit when I watched again this morning. I was looking for that, and it's so awesome. And the best part is the advertising where it's basically Gump and Chairman Mao, and they have a big picture of Forrest Gump in life size, and his eyes are closed while he's playing ping pong. So funny.
And it's actually the first Best Picture Oscar winner to also win Best Visual Effects.
Yes. It is also our scene of the day. Let's do our ready for the close-up. Okay. Are you ready for a close-up?
Let me find it.
Let's do a scene from Forrest Gump today. It's myself and Molly. We're going to do a scene from Forrest Gump. It is Forrest and Jenny sitting on a bench, and Forrest Jr. swings behind them. It's in the park during the day. And do you want to be Jenny and I'll be Forrest? We can share.
Sure,
or do you want to be Forrest and I'll be Jenny? I don't mind.
You can be Forrest. That's fine.
All right. Tell me when you're ready to go and we'll roll.
It's not loading on my computer.
We can share it. You ready?
Hold on.
Or we can pass the script back and forth. I got one, two, three.
There it is. I got it.
All right. So again, we're in the park during the day. Forrest and Jenny are sitting on a bench. Forrest Jr. swings behind them.
Hallie Joel Osment.
Yes. Hallie Joel Osment. He was excellent in it.
Forrest, I'm sick.
What do you have, a cough due to cold?
I have some kind of virus, and the doctors they don't know what it is, and there isn't anything they can do about it.
You could come home with me, Jenny. You and little Forrest could come stay at my house in Greenbow. I'll take care of you if you're sick.
Would you marry me, Forrest?
Okay. End scene. It's good. Nice job, Molly.
Good job. You do a good Southern accent. See, that's why I wanted to play Jenny.
Yes. So we can do the quiz.
I can do the quiz.
In 5 minutes, let's get a quiz going. Alpha genre movie quiz.
I haven't seen all those movies, but I've seen a lot of them.
Derek and Shay just walked in, and Derek won Clash of the Titans, which I brought for him today. Yes. Up for today's quiz, it is Rise of the Planet of the Apes, Molly. If you win, you don't have Rise of the Planet of the Apes, correct?
No.
It is Rise of the Planet of the Apes. And we are going to start right away. Let me just get some background music here. Today is musicals, the alpha genre music quiz, movie quiz.
It's
musicals today. And instead of reading the 12 that I'm going to pick, for time's sake, I'm just going to start up. The first 10 questions are multiple choice, and the last two are bonus questions. And here's the alpha genre movie quiz. Number one.
Hold on, I'm getting out of the internet so I can't cheat.
You're going to get in the zone? Okay.
All right. Shay's next to me, so she knows I can't cheat.
Disney's Fantasia from 1940. So these are 12 musical movies I consider you should watch before you die. Of course, there's more than 12, but these are the 12 I chose for the questions today. Disney's Fantasia from 1940 was Walt Disney's blank feature film. Was it his first, his third, his seventh, or his ninth?
Third.
That is correct.
Very good.
One
of my